Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramarte Fio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. And you can tell we're still having a little twinge of blog talkitis here. But good evening. I'm Ruthanna Marte-Fio, and this is Gather Round. And we've got some interesting things in store for you. First, Omo Abayu is taking us to Africa. Then Sarit is here with news of Palestine. There's a lot of breaking news. Then after that, we have Lady Justice, Kim Justice, Casey Carraher, and Ron French are coming in to answer all our questions about kink and BDSM. So here we go with Omo.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me today on Aramarte Fio. My name is Omo Abayu. Today on Sense of Africa, I'll be telling you a short history about a particular tribe called the Oro, which is located in Akwa Ibom State, South Nigeria. Let me tell you a brief history about these people. The people of Oro, according to the available records, they migrated to their present locations from the Cameroon Republic, to close neighbor to the Republic of Nigeria. They came by sea on rafts made of wood, bamboo and rope. The migration took place in about the 16th century. The people grouped into Oro, Upangan and Idua quickly embraced Western education as early as 1905, following the creation of the establishment of Methodist Boys High School in Oro. Oro became a division in August 1970, and in 1976 was made a local government area of Akwa Ibom State. Now let's look at the people. What did they do? The people live in the lower basin of the Cross River estuary. It is one of the three major ethnic groups in Akwa Ibom State. The people are made up of Upangan and Idua, like the Sedeleon. While the former group speaks Oro language, the latter speak both Oro and ethnic languages. Meanwhile, English is spoken as an official language throughout the Republic of Nigeria. Oro people are industrious and hospitable. Their main occupations are fishing, farming, trading, craft creation, amongst others. Now let's give you a figure of what the population is like. According to the 2006 National Census, the males from Oro are about 46,208 males, while the females are 41,063 females. The total is 87,461 people in Oro. Now let's take a look at their culture and let's see what they do, how they do their things over there. The culture of Oro people is a greater extent the same as that of Ibibio and Anan ethnic groups of Akwa Ibom State. In the areas of dressing, they almost share the same thing, which is very unique. The kind of dressing people have is very unique from that of other tribes in Nigeria. And also menu dances. You know, their dances as well is kind of different from that of other tribes in Nigeria. And these dances are so unique and wonderful. You know, they are eye-catching. You like it when you see the dances. You know, like intoxicating. It moves you to try to learn how to dance as well, because it's very different, it's unique, and it's very wonderful. Also, their food, rituals, and belief, among others. The culture of the area has the potential for tourist attraction. Now, let's take a look let's just talk about some few tourism issues of the people of Akwa Ibom State in general. Whenever tourism is discussed, the abundance of evidence of tourism potential of Akwa Ibom State leads to the conclusion that here is a pleasure and leisure latent pasture. The Imagine the community at the bank of Atlantic Ocean, where they see brewery, fresh, brief, shifted through unpolluted village of dense mangrove forest to travel for an amazing stretch of over 120 kilometers sandbank that traverses many riverland communities, for an ocean shore to cruise at ebb tide and the rhythmical music of waves providing tourists with exotic sights. This is one of the few attractions, the few beautiful things, you know, people always enjoy whenever they visit Akwa Ibom State and Oron community. And I must tell you that this place is very unique. It's so natural, and you know, the people are very blessed with natural resources too, and they do everything possible to make visitors stay happy. And I'd like to draw the curtain close onto this program. In case you have any other information, or you need me to send you information about this particular people we discuss about, feel free to send me an email, omo_amasetio@yahoo.com. I promise to reply your email on time, and hope to meet you again same time next week on AMSFU. Stay blessed. Bye.
Okay, I'm sorry. We're still trying to work on some of the sound quality. Not that I've got the best equipment either, and Omo doesn't. He's on the island of Cyprus in school. They're from Nigeria. So we're still working on this. But and now, Sarit Jacobson is here. Hi, Sarit.
Hi.
Yay. Okay, tonight, we're going to talk about what's going on in Palestine, because so much is happening right now, today. It's
just
amazing.
Just today.
Yeah. And what we should mention recently, that a deal was made with the Zionist government, with our faster, who has been on a fast for 8 months.
Samir Al-Assawi, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the deal, apparently, is he'll start eating again, and he will get an early release. Get this, early release. He'll be in prison till December, is it?
Oh, my God.
Or something. I mean, first, I thought I read that he was going to still have to be in prison till October, and then I read December. But it's horrible. The man hasn't eaten for 8 months. He's not in the best of health. So they're doing this. They didn't want him because he got so famous. I think they didn't want him to die on their hands. But, you know, that's still possible.
And also some Israelis went on hunger strike.
Yeah. Like,
in solidarity with him. Isn't that amazing?
Yes. It. Anybody you know? Personally?
Nobody I personally know. Maybe some Facebook friends I hardly know.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of them, though.
Oh yes. I mean that's just wow. We weren't expecting that.
I think that really freaks out the Israeli authorities, the Zionist authorities, when they have. Solidarity activists seems to be the most terrible thing to them.
Yes, yes. So it's like, come on, people, join them. That's so interesting.
So
go ahead.
Did you hear what happened in Bilin today?
Yes, but okay, Sarit, I don't understand it. I know the military and everybody, they were there taking pictures and measurements and things. What
yes.
is that? Why? What,
to intimidate the people.
Just to intimidate?
So
they already have a wall there, so that was...
Yeah, they want to intimidate them so they don't do the protest
on
Friday.
Right, for what, 2 or 3 years now? Every Friday, there's a major protest.
Yes.
And a lot of internationals come in for that.
Yes.
But okay, so that's what it, I read it. It's like, well, why are they doing this? They've already built this friggin' wall there.
They build a monitoring tower.
Yes.
In the village. This is just like an open-air prison. Palestine is becoming more of an open-air prison every day.
Right.
They have no rights to even go to the Israeli authorities and complain about settler violence, which is happening every day also.
Right.
It's just horrific daily life. I can't imagine anyone having to live that way, not even... Also, in Gaza, they were shooting at fishermen again.
I saw that. And, you know, the fishermen originally were supposed to be able to have... They could fish miles and miles out. And then that kept getting closer and closer. I think that it was still supposed to be 6 miles, but they totally disregard that. We're having shootings, within a mile of shore. So
yeah, there was also shootings in Jenin because somebody got too close to the separation fence or something.
Well,
it's just a prison.
It is.
They can't move.
Either place, whether they're in the West Bank or in Gaza, it's an open-air prison.
And they can't... It's really hurting their livelihood.
Mm-hmm. Well,
they're really, really, really poor.
Yeah.
Because of it.
And so if anybody has, like, friends on Facebook, like I have an Israeli friend who tells me that, oh, but the Palestinians in the West Bank, they're fine. They're making money, they're happy, they like being there, they like the way the government is. And, you know, he is so deluded. And
yes.
He's not...
I meet them every day.
I know, but he's not a bad man. That's the whole thing. He really believes what he's saying. And, talk about propaganda. We think we have it here, and we know we do, but... Israel is such a tiny little country, and yet somebody can live there and not really understand what's going on.
Yes.
He doesn't think it's nice that people are put in, like, Gaza in a concentration camp thing. And he doesn't get it. I find that amazing. But, you know,
the dehumanizing process starts in kindergarten.
Yeah.
All through school.
What do they do in the lower
when
grades
they,
of school? What do they teach
When they
you?
Teach about Palestine, they don't even put color pictures of Palestine or anything. They don't even mention it. They teach that it's Israel.
Right.
I didn't even know that occupied territories were occupied until I was about 17 or something.
Wow.
I didn't know nothing. I can tell about myself. I was so confused when I lived there. I just knew I wasn't going to serve their army. And I knew something was wrong, but it was very hard to find out what was wrong. People would tell me I was wrong when I thought there was abuse of civil rights.
Wow.
Yeah, the whole country is a military base.
Yeah. It's getting worse. United States and Israel just made a deal for, what was it, $10 billion worth of war machinery or something?
Yes. Yes, yes. Oh, yeah. And a lot of it is gifts that we never hear about.
Right, right. Well, yeah, we do gift them with a lot, let's face it. I don't know. Well, you know, they celebrated Earth Day with the Zionists damaging 126 more trees, the squad.
Oh, and even more than that, the IDF destroyed a lot of trees this week, olive trees to be precise. I can tell you exactly how many. I got the numbers down. They got a lot of trees this week. They don't like trees, even though it says in the Bible that you cannot kill trees.
Right, right. And trees have been sacred to every kind of religion. And but see that another proof. We know that the Zionists are not religious. The squatters aren't religious. They're Zionists, and it's a political entity. It has nothing to do with religion. So they'll use religion But,
absolutely.
But they aren't believers. They don't practice.
Yes.
But there was something else I'm trying to think. Besides the firing of the fishermen and the pictures and measuring and the trees, there was something.
Oh,
and,
yeah,
and
they're legislating new laws in the Israeli Knesset where the settlers will be able to use lethal force more easily.
Ah, and they're already doing everything possible, from the dogs to, you know, just beating people to death.
I know. What are they going to do next? I'm scared for them. I wish people would organize something here, big protests or something, big boycotts,
yeah. Well,
right,
no,
their legislators.
The somebody was claiming that Twitter had a lot to do with the fact that the Zionists made the deal with I can't pronounce his name. You know who I mean.
Samir al-Assawi.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they said that the Twitter campaign had a lot to do with that.
Oh, yes, it did. It's shocking to them. They don't know how to deal with this new social media. All they can do is dedicate a unit for it and hire people to fight it. But
like, they hire people to mess with us.
Yes.
You know, it's like, okay. It works. It frustrates us more than anything else. It's just like, oh God, they're doing something else, because a lot of our issues with Facebook are not really Facebook issues. But I don't know. Well, now this law, I mean, is it already passed the rate, or
just talking about it, but they can pass it, I think, because they have a majority of fascists in the Knesset.
Right. Yeah.
There's one good woman in the Knesset, a few good people, but there's not enough good people. There are good people, but not enough.
Well, that one lady, she was on the flotilla, the Mavi Mara, right?
Yeah, I like her.
Yeah, I do,
Hanin
too.
Hanin Zoabi. She's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't killed her, truthfully. I mean, I don't want to send that out there, but I've worried for her, because she says what she thinks.
Yes, I worry for her too, but I think they will let her live, because they are afraid of, and they're also afraid too. Everyone has fear. Everyone's afraid of.
True. Yeah. Like, sometimes, I mean, I think they are afraid of going too far. I can see that.
But right. Yes, they have already beat her up in the Knesset in front of everybody.
Yeah.
I was totally shocked. When I saw that, I realized the stuff in Israel really need to speak out loud about it. That I saw that 4 years ago when they raised a hand on her after she came back from the flotilla. I was shocked.
Yeah.
Very shocked.
It was ugly. Because, I mean, she was one of the people who was brave enough to be there. And she wasn't afraid to talk about what happened. But speaking of that, before we let you go, the Israeli government, the Zionists, and the Turkish government are talking about making knives, and the Zionists are supposedly going to give money to the families of the people they murdered.
Yes, I heard of that.
But a couple of the families, you know, they aren't really that interested. They want real apologies. They, you know, instead of just that thing that Bibi sort of spewed out, you know, they want apologies. Sort of like Rachel Corrie's parents. They didn't want money. That's why they sued for a dollar. They just wanted an admission.
I totally understand them.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know,
that was so crazy.
So, but I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
In a minute here.
It was nice talking to you.
Well, it's nice talking with you, and we'll see you back in 2 weeks, in a fortnight.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll see you then.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Therese.
Bye. We'll be right back.
anything. I just said that
Blog Talk was getting better, and I don't know, not exactly. But it looks like we have, everyone is here now. We have Kim Justice, hey, known as Lady Justice. We've got Casey J. Carraher, known as Casey. And we've got Reverend Ronald French, known as
that.
Who? Okay, guys. We're talking, I'm asking, you're telling, about and BDSM. And, you know, I mean, I thought, oh, people are going to be excited and, you know, like this. So my first response was from a Facebook friend who said, why are you doing this? And I it took me, I had to think before I answered, because it's like, well, you know, you're pretty open-minded about a lot of things. Why wouldn't this be something that would interest you? So I'd like to find out how all three of you got into this lifestyle. Like, was this something when you were 2 years old, you liked, watching ladies in leather boots or something? Or, you know, how did you come to it? Kim, let's start with you. Lady Justice.
Well, I can't say that I was 2 years old. I was probably, you know, the first time that I noticed leather, I was close to 10 years old. It was the 70s, of course, and my parents had one of those kind of round clubbed chairs. And I enjoyed the way that it smelled and the way that it felt. And, you know, I felt very powerful sitting in it. As a young adult, coming up in the early 80s, we were all there, and we saw some of the music videos, and some of them had very sophisticated sexual scenarios in them. They might have been hinted at, but you could recognize them. And I saw my first hints of power exchange in a Duran Duran video. it was the two figures silhouetted, a man and a woman, and the woman was always standing over the man, and they were connected to a chain. He had a collar on, and on, you know, I was preteen, around that age, and I remember thinking, that's interesting. I don't know exactly what it is. But it led me to buying my first pair of handcuffs at Spencer's Gifts at 16.
Oh, handcuffs at 16. Okay, then.
Oh, you ask.
Right. Okay. Ron, what about you? What was your first experience, or how did you get involved?
I was one of those little kids, preteen. Pre-two-digit, actually, where my mother would have to dig me out of the department store's leather jacket rack, because I love the smell of leather. And, yeah. And periodically growing up, you always saw different images of S&M, you know, here and there, whether it be tongue-in-cheek or whatever it might be. And I remember back in about 93, 94, I had some friends say, I used to talk smack, you know, like the rest of the guys would. One guy said, well, put your money where your mouth is. And in the city of Boston, or Cambridge, actually, there was a bar that catered to an S&M night or a fetish night. And I got hooked ever since. And to the point where, in Southwest Florida, I helped out meet a bar owner, and they've been about 10 years running strong now. And, I even was a co-founder of a master circle down here. And, it's just something that, to me, which I find funny with you now, because if you're saying people are against you on the topic, you know, I think they were under a rock when the 50 Shades of Grey came out, which was kind of looked at with tongue-in-cheek with the people who are in the lifestyle, you know?
Right.
But, because it's popular now, you know? And pre-popular, it might have been taboo. What I always called it foreplay with Sting anyway, you know, and that's just how I see it. I mean, I've been like interested in the leather scene per se. You know, even though I'm heterosexual, I always had an admiration for like the Leathermen and how they did things, along with you know, your fantasy fetish where you have like your dominaes or dominatrixes and that kind of thing as well. So you know, because my attitude is a broad spectrum of learning from everybody on the different levels and techniques of what they would do with each other, you know. So I was in it for a long time, about 10 years running strong. I had a sabbatical for the last, I don't know how many years now, and but I mean, to me it's a different point than just, you know, playing games. So until I meet the right partner, then I just kind of I sit on the wayside.
Well, you know, I don't want to squeeze Casey. I remember you're still here, Casey. But in speaking about the taboo aspect, I used to give discussions on human sexuality at pagan festivals. And when BDSM or any sort of fetish play would get brought up into the conversation, it was still a taboo in the middle of a pagan festival where half the attendees were naked. So, you know, you might be in a very liberal crowd, and it's still, you know, concept of power exchange and, you know, dominance and submission is still edgy for a lot of people.
Right. On that, I just wanted to say that there is it's years ago that I was there, a festival called Free Spirit in Maryland that was in a location that actually had a building for the BDSM. So a lot of pagans spent a lot of time there. Casey, what
nice.
About you? How did you get involved in this? What was your first, did you like the smell of leather like these two?
You know, I hear that a lot, and that's really interesting, and I do like the smell of leather, but it wasn't something that turned me on to this entire scene from the get-go. I love all of that. I don't know if I would consider myself truly a leather person, although that means different things to different people. But what I was especially drawn to ever since I was young was bondage. And in particular, rope bondage. You know, there's many different kinds of bondage with many different types of materials. But even from a young age, I remember, and I think I wrote this on some profile somewhere, that I would somehow connive my friends or my brother sometimes or whatever to simply tie me up, bound me up by my hands and feet and wrap around my body, throw me in the closet, oddly enough the closet, and leave me in there. and I would enjoy it. I used to like to play with masking tape or duct tape. I'm sorry, duct tape. The idea of having duct tape over my mouth and playing kidnapper and all that of those sorts of things were always pretty erotic to me. And that was young. I mean, that was pre-pubic. When I moved into high school a little bit more, I started toying with the idea of pain a little bit more and mixing the two together. So I would, again, connive some friends that weren't necessarily sexual partners in any way, shape, or form to partake in some activities with me that were relatively innocent, yet definitely part of the formation of who I am today. So that's where that started. And now I'm just more formally getting introduced to the quote-unquote scene of people that are both identify as leather folk and kink folk, because there is some crossover, but they are two often considered two different things. So that's where I come from.
Okay. Well, what is the difference between kink and leather people?
Well, there are two distinct major segments, I would say, of the community. There's a leather community, which is predominantly gay men, and then more of a hetero-centric kink community. And I don't know if the other co-hosts would kind of view things like that, but while there are overlaps in the communities of as far as things that you know, people do and ways they gather, there are distinct differences.
Okay. I see the leather is more regimental and kink was more freestyle. Kink was more, for me, slang, where, you know, if you belong to a leather group or a leather society, you know, you had your handkerchief laws, you had your household laws, you had a set of rules, you know, a code, if you would. And that's how I saw it.
I would say that not everyone in the leather community is bound to strict rules, but considering that the leather community as we know it was originated by soldiers coming back from the wars with their surplus.
There was a book out called The Leather Ring's Journal, and that was the history account of S&M of the soldiers.
Yeah, I mean, so of course, more kind of regimented traditions are going to carry over, and you know, I like that. I like that on a lot of levels. I mean, if the regimented things are keeping you too adherent, so that you're not having fun, of course, that's not a good thing. But I like a bit of protocol, and I like that element of dress and
I think that certain people come into it from a kink perspective as well, more that are looking for sensual, sensory experiences that are more related to sex, having yourself put through different scenarios that are interesting and artful and painful and pleasurable and all of those things. And while that is definitely present within the leather community, like Lady Justice said, and Reverend, there is a lot more protocol. So it really depends on what your flavor is, what you're really looking for as you enter the community. But there is a huge link up and there's a huge amount of crossover. I have not come across a lot of people that are only one or only the other.
That makes sense. Ron talked about going to a bar and meeting people. Casey and Kim, how did you first find your first, like, serious, not Casey's brothers who were tying him up and throwing him in the closet, but beyond that, you know, I mean, how did you find your first partner?
Oh, oh my. Do you want to go first, Casey?
Mine's simple, so I'll just get it out of the way. Actually, just about, it's a little year and a half, 2 years ago, coming up this next year anyway, this year, I met my friend who is probably one of my best friends at this point now. We connected together very well, and I met him, funny enough, on Grindr, and we met for lunch, and then it was all she wrote, and we kind of started hanging out after that. But he introduced me to more of the idea of the leather scene in particular, because in Chicago, where we're at, it's, you know, it's one of the hearts of the leather scene, one of the original areas where it began historically, anyway. So there's a pretty strong scene. And a strong community of men and women as well who follow that. So, you know, it just really started very mellow for me, being from a tutorial standpoint, where I was, you know, taken to some bars and introduced to some very interesting surroundings. And now today I go to some events, and I plan to go some a little more hardcore events here, and have gotten some instruction and gotten electrocuted, and that's all she wrote. And so I've been running with it ever since. So
yes, you have. Lady Justice, you're first.
Well, my, I after I purchased the handcuffs, I tried to do kinky things with them to my vanilla boyfriends at the time, who thought I was strange and deviant, and they were not interested at all. I didn't have my first S&M experience until I was about 19 or 20. I can't remember exactly. And that, it was a very different time. It was, you know, before the internet, before all of the kinky networking sites. And I made that connection through a newspaper called Scene Magazine in Cleveland. My first time in a leather bar was in 1998, and went with some friends. And by that point, you know, I knew I was kinky. I was way into leather. I had found myself a copy of Leatherman's Handbook years before at a used bookstore and read it over and over until it was dog-eared. But going to the leather event at the bar and finding other individuals just like me, well, not exactly just like me. I was the only woman, but mostly like me. I mean, we all had a love of leather. We were all interested in being very social and a lot of us into some elements of play. But, you know, after that I was hooked because it was the best of all the worlds. There was fundraising going on that night. People were in fetish attire. People were playing. People were socializing. And I thought, you know, how could it get any better? And, you know, from that point on, I was in lock, stock, and barrel.
Okay. Well, I want to say that Lady Justice can be found at justice or ladyjusticeisserved.blogspot.com. Ron is at www.accesssanctuaryandchapels.com. And Casey is blogtalkradio.com/radioakasha. So I wanted to get that in. Ron, tell me how this type of lifestyle fits in. Is the sacred sexual experience what, since you are affiliated with a religious organization?
Well, it's funny you mentioned it. I've seen where some mystics would have an experience called subspace, and even Doms would have the same type of experience, where you're almost in a meditative state of play, and if you're really synced in with each other, you kind of like in a harmonious tone. It's quite the experience. It could be anything from, you know, whether you're tied up and being flogged to sensual touch play to, you know, any other type of, you know, act or kink, if you would. You know, it's like a harmony. It's like you're truly being synced up emotionally, physically, and you kind of reach a certain heightened state. And you know, you can almost compare it to, you know, let's say Buddhist meditation to a shaman's form of meditation as well. And the way I see it, and that's just the kind of experience, you know, it's just so funny. It's kind of like an experience I keep seeking. You know, when I was first playing, I was a casual player, publicly and privately. If I was at a play party, one night, you know, I became popular, and I found myself 6.5 hours of, you know, throwing floggers. And I used to make my own gear. You know, I had a leather company I used to sell to about 5 different shops. And so I'll go off and I'll play and have different instruments and toys with me. And I had a duffel bag full of stuff. And, you know, I'd walk out. I looked like I fell in the pool. I was drenched head to toe. And, you know, I had a bunch of new people and experienced people. And, you know, it was good. It was fun. But although in that quest for the, you know, the right play partner and the right person. And, you know, it's no prevail, but, you know, it's just, to me, it's a quest, you know. But you get to meet many different people, and you have an enjoyable experience.
Yeah. Would you just say, and you may all be biased, and that's okay, but have you found besides these people that you meet being fun and nice people, do you think that they're a little bit higher on the IQ grid?
I've heard it said that people who are kinky typically have higher IQs, but really, I mean, any subculture is just a part of the main culture. It's the same people, just a little more focused. So I don't think I could or would say that.
I actually feel that the people that I have met in the community just in the last couple of years, again, I think Kim says it, where they are focused, so that is meaningful. But I do feel that the people that I have met have generally been more intellectual. The people that I have, you know, because you radiate things out, and then you are attracted to other people who also radiate certain things. And my mind goes, and I'm not saying I'm hyper intelligent or anything, but I my mind is pretty creative in the way I think can often be seen as odd by other people. And I tend to draw those same sorts of people to myself. So I have found more intelligent people in this community than I found in the average community of people that I come across from day to day. So, you know, it's arguable.
Well, I think those would be more your intimates, though, don't you, Casey?
Yeah, you know, and like I said, if because there are plenty of people who I've come across in the community who I wouldn't give a second glance to or the time of day, and maybe those people, you know, we don't meet each other's needs, but the people who I actually have come across, who we have been attracted to one another, who we have played, who we have done things with, even just talked with about things, have been either intelligent or actually hyper intelligent. So, and again, it seems disproportionate to what I've come across in, say, other realms of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Hopefully it's not luck of the draw, but it might just be that. And I am fairly new, like I said, so it's hard for me to make a long-term statement on that. And definitely you guys have more of that than me.
Well, now I do have a question for Kim, Lady Justice. You're a dominatrix. Is this true?
I am dominant. It's true.
Okay, so what exactly does that mean?
Well, I would say as a young adult, I mean, I'm the oldest of three surviving children by my parents. Even as a teenager, when my family would be out to dinner and the wait staff would come to the table, they would typically address me, and I would speak to them. So I'm very naturally dominant. That was nobody on my end.
That was me. Sorry. Oh, shit. Oh, God, let me shut it up.
Oh, you're going to get a spanking, Casey.
Hopefully.
You know, and I don't identify as a dominant because I'm a control freak. I think that's a misnomer that's out there. It's just a part of my personality that I've let grow and develop, and that other people seem to enjoy as well. I enjoy S&M play. I play as a top in that element, and it's like taking someone on a journey, and leading their mind and body on an adventure, and I find it very exciting and arousing when people are open to sharing that experience.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. Do you have clients, as in do you get paid?
I'm a lifestyle dominant. There are times in the present and past when I will work with a paid clientele. Mm-hmm. And And usually I do that when people won't leave me alone.
Okay.
When we're, you know, they'll see me on a website and we don't really seem compatible past their point of a fantasy. And you spoke about fantasy earlier, and a lot of people won't consider me anything past a fantasy.
Okay.
You know, they don't want to see me as a human. They don't necessarily want to talk. They want what they want.
Right.
And people will even send off, you know, checklists. And it's like, okay, obviously you're not, you know, you're not interested in friendship. You're not interested in knowing me. You're not interested in intellectual discourse. You know, so let's just keep this what it is. And that's not my preference. And those experiences are nominal compared to other ones that I've had with friends and lovers on a much more intimate basis.
Okay. Now, then that brings up, you said the word lovers. So the three of you, how has this impacted your relationships with lovers who maybe weren't interested in this, or they weren't at the beginning? Tell me, how does that work? If you're interested in this lifestyle and they aren't, or potential dates, do you get
that out? I'm very much in a situation with my partner who he is beyond vanilla. he sees all my stuff as my rope collection grows very fast, by the way, as well as some other things. He sees it. He notices what I get. He doesn't ask many questions. He doesn't really want to know. He's not that interested in, which is very sad to me, actually. So I'm working on that. But, you know, you can't push something on anybody that's not interested. Luckily, you know, I've long considered myself poly. And because of that, I have some relationships at varying levels with other people as well. One person in particular right now who we're very, you know, we're very good for each other in this realm. He's a lot more experienced, and he has been showing me some very interesting things. And so I get on very well, and now I've actually chosen, you know, it's to the point now where it's one of the first things that I'm looking for in a person is their openness to things like that. Otherwise, I'm not really going to give them a whole bunch of time when it comes to befriending them in an intimate way anyway.
Yeah, okay. What about you, Ron?
Well, currently I'm single, and like I said, for me, it was kind of a quest for the emotional and even spiritual sync with the person. And so I decided it's not important to kind of hop into a dysfunctional relationship. But when I do find someone, whether they're vanilla or if they're in lifestyle, you can always start with somewhere. You know, you have a vanilla relationship, and you might find someone who likes to be spanked, you know. And that can always lead into, you know, bondage and the St. Andrew's cross in your living room, that kind of thing. You know.
Okay,
and,
so you wouldn't not date somebody who wasn't, in fact, you might not even bring it up for a couple of dates or something, because you're looking more.
I'm full disclosure. I mean, I'm not gonna scare someone away in one respect, and the other respect, you know, you can't be a dead fish in the sack either. You know, I mean, people who are in the lifestyle are, you know, they're doing it for many reasons. You know, you always hear the expression to, you know, liven things up or to change things around. Well, but you know, if S&M was a part of it to begin with, then there's no change or something, because you're always doing something different. You know, there's always an exploration, if you would.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, yeah, you could be in a vanilla relationship, but you might find that your partner likes to get, you know, likes to get spanked or something, or nails right down their back, or their hair pulled, or anything. You know, there's always something there. You know, and if it's just someone who just wants to be in a missionary position, I think they're missing out.
Okay. As long as they're adventurous enough to try something besides a missionary position, there's hope.
Exactly.
Okay.
At least for me, at least.
So we hope. Kim.
Yes.
What about you?
I am polyamorous.
Mm-hmm.
Have been so for over 10 years. The last vanilla relationship I had was in 1997. So while I wouldn't be opposed necessarily to dating someone who's vanilla, I think unless they were really progressive-minded, there might be very different notions of what to do on a Saturday night.
Okay. Hi. Okay. Nice way to put it. We should ask. Okay, three. Now we'll ask Ron. Are you poly?
Like I said, I'm just single. But when I like to be monogamous. That's just my choice.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Absolutely.
I spend a lot of time that way, so I understand. Okay. It's a good question, good answer. So, I was asked by somebody about people who are in the lifestyle and different partners and doing strange, quote-unquote, things. Are they more likely to catch disease? I personally think that you would be less because I think you would be more aware of your bodies and taking precautions, but tell me.
I mean, I think one of the some of the major components of being in the BDSM community, if you're responsible in the BDSM community, obviously, you know, there's different sorts of people, is that you are aware. And one of the terms that you hear people come across and use every once in a while is like risk aware. And that means different things. You know, that means that you are aware of possible injury that you could sustain, whether that be physical or psychological, depending on the scene, and depending on how someone handles it, but that you're also risk aware of what may transpire in the way of exchange of body fluids. But I generally think that unless you're talking about sex in particular, the likelihood of transmitting some sort of disease is, you know, about as likely as giving a person a handshake and transmitting a disease that way. I mean, unless you're really talking about some sexual play.
Right. Well, what about the quote unquote toys, things like that? What are they? And Ron was talking about he used to sell some.
Mm-hmm. Kim's a master of this notion, isn't she?
I do have toys in my attic.
I mean, that's what cleaner is for. They're specialty cleaners and stuff.
Exactly.
Some traditions, if you would, usually a submissive would buy or a slave would buy the toys. So they would have their own toy locker, so it was exclusively for them. So a dominant, like in my case, I just go to my shop and I'll whip something up and put it in their locker if it need be, or if there's a new toy I want to try out or something. And tell me how this feels. But if you have a submissive or slave that has an interest in a particular kink or they want to feel a particular sensation. They'll usually buy their own, and again, they have their own designated locker so that you don't use Flogger A for 20 different people. You actually have their own toy sets, you know, so it's theirs only, you know.
There are ways to clean toys. I use my toys on different people, and I'm always fastidious about how I keep them and how I clean them. I don't get into huge amounts of like blood sport with my toys for that reason. At least with the floggers and things. but the spray antiseptic that you can purchase in Beauty Supply is great to clean your leather toys. It's the one that barbers and hairdressers use. It's about $8 a can. You know, it's something I've always used.
I mean, it's a difference of opinion. I just kept stuff from separate lockers, or I would have you know, different duffel bags or different partners at that point.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I mean that is probably the best way to go about it. But that can get mighty expensive if you're talking about playing with a community of people. And
I don't think
blocking.
That many people do. I don't think that many people do or have the ability to do that.
Yeah, one flogger can cost several $100.
As a dominant, you know, again, I would have them buy their own stuff or have their own gear. You know, that's what made their locker.
But many people can't. I mean, I know people that are just getting started, and I mean, and as the three of us know, this isn't an inexpensive lifestyle.
I was just going to ask that. Yeah.
You know, floggers, if you purchase them, are $150 to, you know, $300. And
you can get a whole kit for that for me. I mean, I had restraints for about, my restraints cost no more than $40 or $50. My floggers range between $40 and $80, you know. And then if you want to get anything more expensive, you can go get the hand-braided ones. I mean, you can go to eBay and still buy them. I mean, they're not, and there's another place called FetishAuctioneer.com. And because the lifestyle became so popular, you can actually get hand-braided cat and nine tails relatively cheap, for less than $50 now. So for me, it's like, you know, if you shop correctly, you can get a whole set for less than $200. So to me, it's a misnomer. I mean, even if
all due respect, I'm a pretty good shopper. And, you know, I think I'm pretty wise and savvy about where to buy things. And as far as, like, you know, value or cleanliness, you know, I've been playing since I was about 20 years old. I'll be 40 this year. I have never had an issue with anyone having any complications from me using my toys on them.
No, that's excellent. That's
in that time.
Really take care of them. Yeah.
Oh,
I was just going to say, like everything else, I mean, I'm sure you can get things across the a wide price range, but I think what Ron is talking about, if you're only going to be playing with one person, then of course one of you or both of you are going to be buying the toys. But if you're doing a lot of multiple stuff and as the dominant one, as Kim is, then it's really probably a good thing for her to have all these because she takes care of things. If you didn't, Kim, you would, be in a world of shit.
Well, because I'm a caring dominant, I care about the people that I'm playing with, whether they're a lover or it's someone that I happen to connect with in a bar and at an event. You know, if I'm a good dominant, I care about their health and their well-being and their safety, not just, you know, each of us getting off.
Right.
And are there people out there that aren't caring dominance? Absolutely. And there are definitely people out there who aren't caring submissives either. So we run the people that you come across runs the gamut of personality traits and qualities and values, just like any other realm of people that we've come across. So there's no, and I think what we've illustrated here is there's three different people with three different styles, not completely different, just some different styles. I mean, like I said, I'm a rote person. Specifically, that's my major function, not malfunction, but function. And yeah, I have a set of nice hemp rope that I'm not going to share with everybody. I'm going to use on maybe myself and a few other intimate partners. And then I have my MFP rope, which is your cheaper. You can throw it in the washer with bleach practically and wash the lube out of it if that's what comes up. And that's what I'll use with other people. There are so many different ways that we go about interrelating with other people when it comes to our things and our items. And I think that no one's wrong. It's just that everyone just has their own styles.
Oh, everybody has their own preference.
Right.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What about your family and friends? Obviously, the people you're intimate with know your lifestyle, but how about other people around you, people you work with, your neighbors, your family? You know, what about them?
Oh, I love this one. Well, for me, it was funny. When I came out of the leather closet, if you would, it was when I was actually manufacturing. So my mom and dad came to visit. They walk in, and there's a beam swinging from the living room ceiling with restraints on each end. And I had about 150 floggers on the ceiling edge hanging down, you know, so I have a whole wall full of floggers. About 150 of them. And my mother
goes... Did they ask who your decorator was?
No, my mother looked at me and went, "This does not surprise me one bit," you know, because, you know, I was such an odd kid, you know, as it was, you know. So she looked at it and was like, she was kind of smirked and like, you know, okay, well, yeah. She has another facet of Ron's personality. And my dad... you know, my dad's such a businessman, and I think partially, too, he's kind of envious of the crazy shit I do growing up, because I'd tell him some, you know, weird stuff, and he would just kind of shake his head and walk away. So when he saw this, I told him, oh, you know, it's not only a lifestyle, but a hobby business, and when I told him the business end of it, he was more accepting of the business end than the lifestyle, and he said, no problem. Let me tell you something. My cousin and my brother have a larger dungeon set than I do right now. So for me, there's no secrets. I don't have any secrets. I'm very open disclosure with family and friends. So if they get a hang up on it, it's their hang up, not mine. So that's how I approached it. And I had to approach it that way. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Okay. Very open. Casey.
I am open. Completely. I have no issues with anybody. And this came out when I was, you know, I've come out of the closet being gay. I have come out of the pagan closet, which was easier than the gay closet. And then coming out of the closet as being a person who was into BDSM and kink was actually especially easy. Although if I would have done it the reverse way, I think it would have been the opposite. I don't care what anybody thinks, to tell you the truth. I mean, I work in a professional and I work in a social service environment, so they're all fucked up anyway. So, you know, if they were to try to judge me in that environment, then, you know, I need to move on anyway. So I'm pretty much at the point where I don't care. And I'm open with family as well. And, you know, they give me looks, but they want to know more about it. And I think when you don't make it into something that is freakish, or you don't present that air about yourself, then people just want to know more about things. And I like to be, I'm a trainer. I teach people all day long. So I like to present things in a way that makes people curious, not scared.
Right. And, oh, that makes me think, I have to say, but this wasn't anything kinky, but my cousins and I had gone to an adult bookstore, and I actually won a bunch of products. And so we went back to one of their homes, and we sat around, you know, sharing things. Well, one thing that I sure didn't care to have, I gave to a cousin. And then later I told Casey about it, and he was all, well, I could use that. And so I said, well, if they haven't used it, okay. So I told my cousin, and it was it New Year's, Casey, or Christmas? New Year's. I don't know.
When
anyway,
did we what?
When we had a party, and they came to the party, and they brought the toy for Casey. And it was just, oh, Thanksgiving. it was just, it's like, okay, well, you know, everybody's an adult here. So it's like, oh, okay.
Oh, this, oh yeah.
Yeah, the glass
one of my new one of my new favorites, by the way, which I'm meaning to work on a little bit more. I love people, and I love when the right kind of people give you the right kind of gift. So especially when they're not quote unquote in anywhere near our lifestyle, but they see that you're in it, and they're like, I found something for you, and they bring it to you. That tickles the shit out of me, I'll tell you that.
These people aren't in the lifestyle, but they're very sexual and adventuresome, and so that's why, you know, I said, well, you guys take this thing, but yeah, it's funny how family can surprise you sometimes. Kim, have you ever been closeted?
No. No. No, I mean, I was almost 5 feet tall in kindergarten. So, I mean, I wasn't in the closet then. I was kind of the freak in the crowd. But, no, I mean, I'm also pagan.
Right.
And kinky and polyamorous. So, you know, the only thing in my closets are clothes.
Okay.
So, no, but I'm out to my family, friends. I mean, there are really no secrets about my life.
Well, I think that we've found that it just takes too much energy to be in the closet over any of these issues. And here's another one of those. Maybe we're biased because we all happen to be pagan for whatever reason. This is who's here tonight. So do you think that percentage-wise, pagans are more, and pagans we know is a big umbrella term, but are pagans more adventurous in these directions? Percentage-wise, guys.
I think we're not limited. I don't think we don't put limitations on ourselves. I think that's where it comes from.
I would like to think that, but I think that that's probably not true. I would like to think that it was true, but there's part of me that says that I can't quite make that claim right now because I don't think that would be right, because I know there's a lot of people out there. I mean, there's a lot of kinky-ass Republicans out there, the Christian Republicans, you know what I mean? So
I've seen them too.
Right, so it's hard to say. I think that you may see us more because we're used to being out and we're used to being kind of shocking at times, so you may actually see us, but it doesn't necessarily mean that there aren't other people that are just quieter about it.
Okay.
True.
That's possible. Do you agree with that, Kim?
You know, I've seen all religions represented in the leather and the kink communities. Most of my closest friends are kinky and pagan, but I think that's like Casey said earlier, birds of a feather flock together. But
right.
No, I think there's a pretty good cross section of the population who are kinky,
yeah,
whether they're in or out.
And we're not even talking about the Japanese. That's a whole other subset of people. Woo! and people from Germany. Now we don't even need to discuss that. That we all know where that what's going on over there. But
you had me two girls, one cup. You know.
Oh, exactly.
The rope.
Right.
So what are some of the common practices and common fetishes in the lifestyle?
Oh, good question. Fun question.
Well, we've talked about bondage. Bondage is a big one. Power exchange, you know, dominant, submissive, master, slave, corporal punishment, S&M, elements of service. Leather, of course. How about Old Guard?
Oh, Old Guard. You know, you were talking one time about a shopping list, or yeah, I remember the checklist was more of a contemporary stance at one point, about I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, where everybody did a checklist met someone new. And I found myself at a round table about five different houses where they were all Old Guard, which was just their practices were, there was no checklist. If you want a checklist, go make a shopping list, you know, Walmart, because that's what those are for. You know, that was their attitude. It's a very, your mind, this is it. You know, this is, yeah.
I don't think that's Old Guard at all.
Supply,
was that more dogmatic?
They still had the safe words. It was just your exploration was your exploration was through conversation and through play, and it was regimental without being dogmatic, if you would. Or it was kind of the dominant had a set plans of what they're going to do, and to see whether or not, you know, the submissive would go through this, you know, to the program or not. And
I don't think that's old bars though, at all. I mean, we could have a whole nother hour discussion on old guard versus new guard.
Oh, wow.
And that's, and, you know, that's actually more of an advanced conversation that probably a lot of listeners aren't really up for having right now. They want to know what we do. To be honest with you, they really want to know what we do. The question was very pointed from Ruth Ann. Anything from just liking to bury your face in people's armpits and smell, you know, people's natural smells very light. That's a very light fetish that I wouldn't say it's necessarily light, but it's something that a lot of people are into is those natural smells, including the smells of leather and all those very strong, pungent odors, all the way to fisting, you know, people that like to have very large objects inserted into their body from different aspects, so, and everything in between.
And electricity. True.
Oh, yes, definitely electricity.
Wands. Hair pulling, biting. You know, impact paddling. Play, single tails, close pins.
When you say impact play, I know what it is, and everybody else here knows what it is. But what, you know, for people out there listening, what is impact play?
You hear it
you
called
mean like
rough
punching
body.
And stuff.
Yeah, rough body play. Like punching. Not in an abusive fashion.
Right. Well, depending on who you're talking to. I know a guy, he's hot too, and I'm, you know, whatever. We'll see about that eventually. I'm a little scared of it, but he is, you know, we talk about a lot of people have the kidnap and rape fantasy as well, that kind of fetish. Yeah. And I know a person, I don't know if Kim knows who he is or anything, but this is Chicago, but he actually will come and sneak into your apartment. You'll make an agreement beforehand, and he'll put you out. I mean, he'll use chloroform, and he'll put you out, and you'll wake up, and you'll be completely bound up and then played with after that. To me, that's, again, you have to be risk aware of that, because that can be very dangerous. But you know, I mean, there's a lot of anything you can think of that sounds like an interesting scene from a movie can usually be played out. Now, the only one I'm not really interested in trying out is something from a Saw movie. But other than that, there's a lot of, although some of the contraptions in the Saw movies I would really like to work with, just not necessarily from, you know, from the blood, gore, and murder standpoint, but, you know, predicament situations are very popular as well.
But that's another question then. Some of these things sound like, you know, you might need an elaborate scene, the setting. Where do people go? We all hear about dungeons and things like this. Do those still exist?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, they do.
Sure. So, I mean, it's just like a ritual. You compare it with a village, and, you know, how many people actually have a chapel or a temple or altar in their house, you know? And some cases with people in the leather, you know, you can be a bedroom player, for instance, and then you might venture off into a place that's designated as a dungeon, and then eventually or essentially you might have a spare room that has, you know, that's designated as a dungeon there. It all depends on your dedication, you know.
And it goes as far as having a dedicated place in especially large cities as well, where groups of people have gotten together and purchased or rented out, or there's someone who is a benefactor who has rented out a space that's exclusively for that. In Chicago alone, there's several of those types of places, whether they're hetero-oriented, pansexual, or gay. There's that pretty much everything there. I don't know, you know, about a lot of other places because, again, I haven't had much exposure, but I know they're around for sure.
And now some of those are not, they're not just open to the public.
No, you know, a lot of times you have to be invited. You have to, you know, your best option is to just meet people and, you know, put it out there. You can't be in the closet about it if you're looking to do something like that. I mean, at least not the complete closet. You need to find people. You go to bars, you find nights where they have, you know, certain themed nights, and that's where you meet people. And if you hit it off and if it seems like you're not completely insane, then a lot of times you get invited to try that stuff out.
Yeah. And many, many leather bars have play equipment in them.
Mm-hmm.
whether it be, you know, a St. Andrew's cross that you can restrain someone to for flogging or spanking or whatever sort of play, or cages or boot black chair. Typically, you'll find a space for a kinky opportunity in a leather bar.
Okay.
Well, they have those benches, too, don't they? Looks like
so
a,
what's that?
Like a bench. It looked like a sawhorse, but it was designed so you would straddle it and put you in different positions.
Yeah.
It could just be something that looks simple, but it can be. The word deviant is used sometimes, usually in the, in regular it's used negatively.
The word deviant is actually used in the DSM, which is a diagnostic manual that our psychologists and psychiatrists use to diagnose people with mental conditions. And it is still listed as a paraphilia, is what it's called, as often a sexual dysfunction of people that require, and they try to make it very clear, but, you know, they say it in a very flippant sort of a way most of the time. It's kind of glossed over, the fact that people require these fetishes and these things in order to have satisfaction. Now, we, all of us, I'm sure, I'm going to go ahead and just say it out there, it may not be, but for me in particular, vanilla is fine. It's fun. I have a great time when I'm doing that. But I also like the other. I don't require anything to get off per se. But it's really it's in the books as a mental issue. I found oddly enough when I was at what's called ShibariCon. It was a wonderful event. A little expensive, but wonderful. It was a pansexual rope event. Shibari is a rope bondage technique, I took part in a focus group while I was there of a gentleman working at a Catholic Chicago university that was working very diligently to try to get this removed from the DSM and from the textbooks as being a deviant personality trait. But as of today, it still is considered to be such officially.
Okay, so it still has a negative connotation.
Not to me. I'm a gleeful deviant. You know,
I'm a gleeful pervert. I mean, you want to call me a pervert? Thank you. As far as I'm concerned,
I think people have worked to reclaim words like freak.
Yeah,
right. Reclaiming. I like that. Reclaiming the words. Yeah, that's funny.
Well, I mean, there's more to it than just your typical thing. I mean, and again, the people who are not open about their sexuality, you don't know what they're doing behind closed doors. So they insult, whoever points a finger saying deviant is probably the biggest deviant of themselves.
Often that's true, and it goes back to what I learned when I was younger. If being normal means that I got to look like you, I would much rather be abnormal. Thank you. So in this realm, I'll go ahead and stick with the deviant pervert. So that's fine.
Be with your friends.
Well, how would you tell any listeners to find out more? I mean, can they just Google gleeful deviant? What's a good way?
I think you should just go to a Lady Justice's blog spot, and I think that might be a good start.
There you go. Lady Justice is served.
Well, I mean, the day of the internet is here, and, you know, do a search on Google about what you're looking for, and you can have a million and one resources come up. There are many different kinky networking sites. One is called, and I'm not endorsing any of these, I'm just telling people where they can go if they want to. One is called FetLife. FetLife.com. One is called Collar Me, and these are personal kind of networking sites. FetLife has some educational forums where people engage in different discussions, and that can be a great place to learn. For gay men, there's a site called Recon, and that's more kind of personals. I'm not sure if there are many discussion forums there.
Not that I've seen in particular.
And books.
Yeah, there are books out there, too. I mean, you've got School of Roses, Room of the Thorns, that's 101, Leatherman's Leather Book, Sex Tips for Dominatrix.
Those are good, but if you're not really looking to read a whole book on it, you just want some quick information. I mean, social networking right now, with the way it is, you can find people with the bits of information that you're looking for to see if you're even interested, and then go from there.
Well, what would you say if somebody actually wants to meet a person? You know, they live in a medium-sized town somewhere. What would be their easiest way?
These networking sites.
Yeah,
that's what I would say.
Put it out there.
Out there and be careful. I mean, honestly, I mean, I only say that because I have already come across at least one person who is not very honest about number one, their experience, and number two, their safety level. And you know, so you want to screen people. It's good to find, if you can find a buddy or find a friend, spend some time building a relationship with at least one person, and then you can bounce things off of them, and you can work together to find other people and find references for people. And so, because when you're talking about I'm talking about bondage a lot, so if I'm going to let someone tie me up, I had better be real clear about what I'm getting myself into, and it better be very safe about it, and not be so desperate because I live in a small town that I'm going to let anybody do it, but you know, take the time and go through the process.
Well, you mentioned something really important, Casey, and that's don't be desperate. I know that there are people that have fantasized about these lifestyles for years and years. They're so thirsty to have the experience that oftentimes they want to rush right in. They don't really want to educate themselves. They don't want to take the time to find out how they might feel about being in these situations, or screening their partners, because they're so excited. But you know, take your time. I mean, you don't have to be in that much of a rush to get from point A to point B. You know, browse around some of these, you know, websites, see what people are saying. Just use common smarts, about interacting with strangers.
Okay.
Stranger danger, you know, I mean, don't jump right in. And,
If you're in a city that has such a thing as a leather bar, that might be a good place to start checking out and trying to find a friend.
Right.
But there again, using common sense.
And get, find somebody that you know and get references if you're going to really hard play with somebody.
And talk to other submissives, because if you're a bottom or a submissive, basically the reputation of another dominant would be based on their word, too. You know, they can tell you what the
very
person's,
true.
You know, yeah. They, you know, the fact is, there's an expression down here where they say the submissive or slave can make you and break you.
Yeah.
It's true.
So, yeah.
That makes sense. How much is this lifestyle growing?
I don't know if we could say that. I don't know if anyone could say that. I mean, it's definitely coming into popular culture more and more. But I think that's been happening from the late 70s on, you know, to the current day.
So it's just more open now, like a lot of things.
Well, I mean, it was mentioned earlier about 50 Shades of Grey. I mean, yeah, people kind of in the community often roll their eyes at that. I mean, but it's cute. Okay, it's fun, it's cute, all that kind of stuff. But that is, and look, I heard there's a movie coming out of that They're filming it. So when that comes out, you'll see a short surge. Ruthann, I know we've talked about this when we're talking about paganism, just the same with paganism. 10 years ago, there was an explosion of paganism because of certain things that happened, and now it's like the Big Bang, where it's done expanding, and now it's contracting again. And we'll see that, and I think we're going to see that with a lot of different things, including the BDSM scene as well.
Yeah. Well, and one thing to just touch just a minute on politics, in this country, the U.S., there's so many conservative movements that I think, just like Casey mentioned paganism, but I think that this may come to a certain point where people start becoming more closeted. I could be wrong, but it seems like a lot of areas are being affected that way.
I'm kind of the natural law ideology, in that every action has an equal or opposite reaction. So while some people might be becoming more conservative, there are other people that are going to swing to that other end of the pendulum and not.
Well, I would,
right, there's almost a homeostasis going on in our community, in our general world population, pretty exactly what Kim just said. For everyone who goes back in the closet, another one's coming out. So there's always a balance, I think.
And people have been doing these sorts of kinky activities with each other for as long as there have been
people.
It's the
beginning, yeah. It's just real. Yeah.
You'll see Victorian imagery of people engaged in bare-bottom spanking. There were actually spanking machines made for mass groups of people that were utilized in French and British bordellos in the Victorian times.
Right.
Those Victorians. And see, inside they were so
prissy.
And,
well, again, that's the balance. That's the balance
exactly,
showing itself.
Yeah, exactly, that dichotomy.
Right. You oppress people and it comes out.
Yeah. I wanted to get your info in one more time here. Ryan can be found at AxisSanctuaryAndChapels.com. Casey is at Blog Talk. Oh, these are www's. At BlogTalkRadio.com/Radio Akasha. And Lady Justice is at LadyJusticeIsServed.blogspot.com. You guys have been very interesting, and you may disagree on some things, but bottom line is you like it. You're having fun. And so that's always good to hear. And maybe people will want to just try something out. You don't have to go just totally jumping off the top of the cliff into the bottomless ocean. We have a minute left. What would be something somebody should just, maybe if they just want to try something, is the flogger the way to go? Or just spanking with their partner?
Grab a belt. I mean, you can tie people up with it, you can beat them with it, whatever.
But then that could take people back to a childhood negative place too.
This is true.
So,
yeah.
Oh yeah, it's different strokes.
Everybody has their own thing. I mean, I like the hands-on approach. I mean, not just like on the spanking, but you can do a sensual massage. You can do a sensory deprivation with blindfolds. You can do all kinds of different things. Yeah.
That's actually what you said is really good. I went to a seminar, and the person just had pervertibles, they call it, which is like kitchen equipment, all kinds of stuff you find around your house that they used for sensory.
Yeah.
And they had the guy blindfolded, and they just, you know, he used all kinds of different stuff on his body in different ways. That's a really interesting way to try out things. And I think a lot of people who are new would actually be pretty open to that too. So try that out. Pervert your kitchen items, people.
Okay, exactly.
That's
and it's not going to cost you anything.
No.
So, I mean, as far as you don't have to go out and spend $100. So, okay, wonderful. Thank you, Kim, Ron, Casey.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
I need to finish packing to do. I'm going to be doing kinky things all week, and I need to finish packing my bags.
Me too.
Okay, right. You guys run off and pack.
Uh-huh. We'll talk
again.
Have
a good weekend, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Take care now.
Bye.